months of hype, Chinese smartphone maker Xiaomi saw a disappointing IPO on Monday. Shares fell as much as 6% on its debut in Hong Kong, trading near the bottom of a range of prices on offer. It puts Xiaomi's market value at about $50 billion, making it the world's third largest listed maker of mobile devices, but that's a far cry from the $100 billion the company was talking about last year.
First, it was her Brexit minister David Davis. Then it was her foreign secretary Boris Johnson. Theresa May hit with two resignations from her cabinet within hours. But on Friday, the prime minister had emerged from a crunch meeting with her cabinet to declare that her ministers were now united. And in a resignation statement, Johnson warned Britain will end up like a colony of the EU after Brexit.
China's retaliatory tariffs on U.S. imports include something Chinese diners crave. Lobsters. That means 25% tariffs on the crustacean as of Friday. That could hit American lobstermen hard. Xinhua says China imported about $128 million worth of live lobsters from the U.S., accounting for up to one-fifth of U.S. lobster exports. The tariffs could hurt the edge U.S. lobsters have over its rivals such as Australia and Canada.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's July 10th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. We are happy to have you along for another business day and another edition of The Opening Bell getting underway on the broadcast today. The best banks, as listed by Kiplinger's Personal Finance. We're going to go through the list this morning and talk about who's on top and who's not. Miriam Cross will be here. She's a staff writer at Kiplinger's. We'll bring her in momentarily. A little bit later in the program, it's a conversation that people are having more and more about lab-grown meat. Is it already impacting the traditional meat industry? And is more research needed on this? In our second segment this morning at about 5:40, Greg Henderson will be here. He's with agweb.com. And we'll have a conversation about lab-grown meat. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street. Later this morning, Dow futures are up 57 points. That's almost a quarter percent. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. Around the globe this morning, markets in Europe are generally higher, with the FTSE up just about a tenth of a percent. Same story for the DAX. And in France this morning, the CAC is up about a half a percent. In Asia, markets are generally higher. The Nikkei is going to end up finishing the day up more than a half a percent, 144 points. The Shanghai is up about a half a percent as well. Just about 13 points. Oil is trading this morning at $74.39 a barrel, which is up about 54 cents. A couple of stories before we get going here this morning. Headlines from the business world. You heard there in the opening montage, the British Prime Minister has met with her cabinet as she tries to restore government unity after resignations of two top ministers over Brexit. The meeting today comes after the Foreign Secretary and the Brexit Secretary both quit, saying May's plans for future relations with the European Union don't live up to their idea of Brexit. Pro-Brexit lawmakers say May's plan for free trade and regulatory alignment with the bloc will stop Britain forging an independent economic course. May's government is split between Brexiteers and a group that wants to stay close to the EU, Britain's largest trading partner. If you're on social media, you should know that Twitter is starting to purge millions of accounts. And Twitter shares tumbled yesterday after news that fake and malicious accounts were getting the boot. Twitter has been open but vague about its crackdown over recent months, an effort aimed at preventing the spread of fake news and making its service more welcoming for real people. The Washington Post put numbers on the effort Friday, reporting that Twitter suspended about 70 million accounts in May and June. Twitter shares fell more than 9% yesterday on this news. Do you like your bank? Is it one of the best? There's a list out of the best banks. Kiplinger's Personal Finance has put it out. Miriam Cross is a staff writer at Kiplinger's, and she's with us this morning. Miriam, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Why this survey? I guess the answer to that question might be, I don't ever remember a thorough survey like this of banks.
Yeah, this is our second year doing it. And the idea is, you know, you may go with a bank because it's local, because there are a lot of branches in your area, but there are a lot of great banks out there that may easily offer better rates and lower fees and better policies, and it's not so hard to switch.
So what were the qualifying factors here that you looked at in ranking the banks?
So it depended on whether we were looking at a national bank, credit union, or online bank, but generally we looked at checking, savings, and money market accounts and CDs. We looked at their monthly fees, how easy it was to waive those monthly fees, overdraft policies, interest rates, the barriers to getting those interest rates, things such as peer-to-peer payment services, ATM fees, out-of-network ATM fees, and then all the way down to things such as whether they offer a free book of checks and whether they have free identity theft protection services.
Yeah, and some of the other categories, too, you chose best banks regionally and online and for military families, even for a high net worth families as well. So let's go down the list. Who were the winners?
So for national banks, TD Bank was our winner, and U.S. Bank, which has a strong presence in the Midwest, was our runner-up. For credit unions, Hanscom Federal Credit Union, which is concentrated mostly in Massachusetts, was our winner. And Connexus Credit Union, which has its presence in a few states in the Midwest, was our runner-up. And for online banks, Ally Bank was the winner, and Bank of Internet was our runner-up.
The list, too, goes on. We'll get into some more of these categories as we continue our conversation. But I'm interested that the number of millennials who are banking these days, first of all, are millennials banking with traditional banks? Are they doing shoeboxes like some older people? What are the millennials telling you, and what did you choose for millennials?
So millennials are pretty comfortable banking online. And it's actually becoming a lot easier to bank solely online for anyone, because online banks such as Ally Bank and Bank of Internet are, you know, making it just like easier, cheaper to bank. They have a lot of no-fee accounts. They pay much better rates, and they will offer free ATM usage, or either like a number of free ATM networks, or reimburse some of your ATM fees. They're much more forgiving with their overdraft penalties. And they also have really long customer service hours. So you can bank almost normally. You don't get the in-person service, but you get something that's almost as good. And for millennials, we chose Ally Bank because it's so simple. They have one checking, one savings, one money market account, but they're all great accounts. And Discover Bank is pretty similar, also one of each, so it's pretty simple. And most of those accounts are fee-free and pay generous rates.
The Discover Bank is an interesting one. It will be of interest for the Chicago area because Discover is based in the suburbs here. One of their slogans is that you can open an account in just minutes. Is that part of this, too, that the ease of getting an account open and running?
Yeah, you can do it online. And if you need any help with it, customer service is usually available around the clock.
Okay. Hang on with us, Miriam. We're going to continue our conversation with Miriam Cross this morning at Kiplinger's Personal Finance. It is a list of the best banks in the U.S. GN.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, the Dow Jones had its best day in a month on Monday with strong economic data appearing to offset worries about trade tensions. The index added 320 points to close at 24,776. The S&P 500 finished ahead 24 points. The NASDAQ composite picked up nearly 68. Some exporters in China say they're feeling the sting of new U.S. tariffs. The general manager of a medical equipment company, for example, says about 20% of his sales are from the U.S., and cuts to orders could cost him $6 million this year. Students headed back to school are the winners in a new tech battle. Microsoft is introducing a $399 tablet to compete with Apple's least expensive iPad. The new 10-inch Surface Go ships on August 2nd. And anyone taller than about 5'9 will be disappointed to hear that the FAA has refused to address the issue of seat and legroom shrinkage on commercial airliners. The agency says cramped seats in coach don't pose a safety issue. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Miriam Cross, a staff writer at Kiplinger's Personal Finance. Kiplinger's has done the list of best banks in the U.S. after a lot of research. Miriam, I want to go through a couple of more of these, if you don't mind. The best bank for retirees is U.S. Bank. Why is that?
So if you're 65 and older, you get a bunch of perks with their premium checking account. You don't pay a fee, which would be $10.95 a month normally, unless you have a pretty high balance. You get free paper statements, free checks, and a 50% discount on safe deposit boxes. They also don't charge you for using ATMs out of network. And there's a bunch of other, there's a bunch of good promotional CD rates and wealth management services, depending on the amount of money you keep with the bank.
The runner-up there was Langley Federal Credit Union. I'm guessing that's a regional a credit union?
It is, but that's interesting because even though it's regional, it's focused, it's based in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia. It's part of a shared credit union network, a shared branch network. So they actually, there are 5,000 shared branches across the country that you can use. So it's like the same, similar with some other credit unions on our list, that even though it's very regional, you can actually make deposits and transfers and get customer service at credit unions all across the country.
Let's talk about the best banks for high net worth families. This is an interesting category. What did you find here?
So here we looked for banks that rewarded people who kept large sums of money in their accounts, and Citibank won for the second year in a row. So you need at least $200,000 for the Citigold package, but you get perks such as unlimited reimbursement of ATM fees that are out of network, free checks, stop payments, incoming wire transfers, money orders, online stock trades, things like that. And Fifth Third, which is a regional bank that also has a presence in the Midwest, you need $100,000 to waive the monthly fee and get you all sort of all kinds of perks like free checks, notary services, money orders, and cashier checks.
Fifth Third is one that I think our audience would be interested in. They recently acquired MB Financial Bank here in Chicago. So Fifth Third from Ohio is going to have a bigger presence also here in the Chicago area. And this category, too, is interesting, the best bank for frequent travelers.
Yeah, so one thing that we found a little surprising is Charles Schwab, which most people know as an online brokerage, has an online bank, and that checking account is a great one for travelers because they will reimburse all ATM fees that you incur no matter where you are in the world, and they don't charge foreign transaction fees with their debit card.
Was the winner for best bank for military personnel a surprise to you guys?
You know what? It actually it won last year, too, Navy Federal Credit Union. So it has a pretty wide swath of membership.
Okay.
If you're a member or a veteran of all military branches or a family member. And free checking account, free ATM rebates, and other things that are important for people who are traveling all over the world.
And then the best, the runner-up there was one that I think a lot of people will recognize, too, as USAA.
Yeah, so USAA was widely known. In fact, my co-writer, her husband is a member of the military, so she's quite familiar with it, and reimburses out-of-network ATM fees. They have a new cashback rewards account and a whole swath of services, including insurance.
The best bank for small business owners.
Yep, so that was a new category for us this year. And we looked at TD Bank for people who prefer having a brick-and-mortar presence. And then Penn Air Federal Credit Union, which is great. It offers, even though a lot of people haven't heard of it, it's focused in Florida. But anyone can open an account there no matter where you are in the country. And it offers a ton of freebies, no minimum deposits, and no monthly fees.
Miriam, as much as we talk about the the ease of opening an online account and doing banking online, you found, too, that people still value that one-on-one interaction with the human, too, don't they?
They do, yeah. A lot of people do prefer talking with a real person when they have more detailed questions. And also, a fair number of people prefer calling a bank to get their questions answered rather than go online.
Yeah, and what do you think that is about? They're just afraid to maybe enter information more than a couple of times online, or is it the digital safety that's also a concern?
No, I mean, for me personally, I'm pretty comfortable using online tools, but it's just nice to have that fallback to know that you can, I don't know, have like, you can get help in person if you need it. It's just something a little comforting about that.
Miriam, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Again, it's the best banks in the U.S. And please come back and join us sometime.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Miriam Cross is staff writer at Kiplinger's Personal Finance. We're going to put a link in the podcast of the broadcast this morning and also tweet it out this morning, the best banks in the U.S. From the Kiplinger's Personal Finance.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago tech giant Groupon is reportedly looking for a buyer, as several of the company's executives and bankers have contacted a number of public companies in the past month, gauging whether an acquisition might be a good deal for them. Dockless bike sharing company OFO is dropping out of Chicago's dockless bike sharing pilot program because of the city's new permit terms. The new regulations say that all participating bike share companies need to incorporate Lock2 technology, or a U-lock or other locking mechanism that allows the bike to attach to a bike rack or other fixed structure. But OFO's bikes don't come with Lock2 tech, and the company says the new rules put them at an unfair disadvantage. And Google veteran Karen Sauter has been chosen to lead Google's expanding Chicago office. Sauter is taking over for Jim Lisinski, who recently left Google after a 12-year career with the company to become a full-time marketing professor at Northwestern. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program, and thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition. It's called Genetically Engineered Protein, otherwise known as lab-made meat. We want to know if there is enough research into its safety, what about regulations and labeling, and how is the real meat industry reacting? The conversation this morning with Greg Henderson, editorial director at agweb.com. Greg, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you.
This story is one that I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention to because not just the discussion and conversation around genetically modified food in general, but because this is, just seems kind of weird, doesn't it?
Well, maybe it does seem kind of weird, and let me clarify. We're not talking about genetically engineered or genetically modified meat. We're talking about lab cultured meat, which is different in that it's taking the cells, the stem-like cells from an animal, and growing them in a petri dish. We're not altering the genes in the meat at all. So we're not talking about GMO meat.
Right. Have you seen this? And I mean, what is it like? Can you give us a description of how this works?
Well, not really. So I'm a journalist like you. I'm not a scientist. Yep. I have not seen this in the lab. The reason that people are gaining interest in this is because two of the giant food companies, Tyson and Cargill, have both invested several million dollars into the startup companies. And certainly when you have companies like that that are food companies now declaring themselves as, quote, protein companies, that gathers a lot of attention. So I have not actually seen this work in the lab, no.
Yeah, but you've described it in a really fair way. The pictures, I think if people saw pictures of it, you literally have a petri dish that has what looks like a piece of meat in it that's been grown from cells. That's sort of the way it is, right?
Well, that is sort of the way it is. Of course, the problem is taking what you can do in a lab and growing it to scale so that you can mass produce it. They are not at that stage yet, although some of them are claiming that they're close to having a product available to be offered to consumers.
So what is the situation then? Is it one that the ag growers, I'm guessing that the cattle growers might have something to say about whether or not this is really called meat? Is that going to be the controversy?
That is a part of the controversy. Is it going to be called meat? You know, we have products that compete with milk on the shelf. And there's some blurring of the lines there. We don't want to see the cultured meat products blur the lines and have consumers believe that possibly they're buying something that is different and is. So we're concerned about how it's going to be labeled, about how it's going to be regulated. It's under, right now this would be under FDA. They say they're going to have a meeting this week to discuss this. And the meat industry is regulated or overseen by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So two different agencies, possibly two different sets of rules.
Yeah, and that's that always creates problems, doesn't it? And I know the U.S. Cattlemen's Association has already filed a petition with USDA on this matter. So there are industry groups, even though the big companies are involved, there's some industry groups that are also involved.
There are some people that are concerned that, yes, it's going to have an impact, and certainly the labeling is a chief reason that we're concerned about it. Will this develop into a product that's going to have an impact on our market? Possibly. I don't think anybody's concerned that it's going to happen anytime soon. This lab-grown or petri dish meat, they can make products that'll be similar to a hamburger, for example, but whole muscle cuts, in other words, steaks and roast, that's a completely different product. Going to take a lot longer. We're talking about probably decades before this all has a huge impact. But when you say huge impact, you know, if it takes 5 or 10% of the ground beef market, that could be a huge impact. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, because you mentioned earlier the milk products and the alleged milk products, like almond milk. How has that fight been going on, and how much of a market has the almond milk taken away from regular dairy cows?
Well, certainly it's a favorite among many consumers because that product has been growing. You know, when we talk about alternative products, a lot of times these products are labeled or promoted as being better for us, being better for the environment, having all of these attributes, natural, organic, and so forth. Almonds, now, as we now know, take a lot of water. A lot of them are grown in California, I think the primary source of them. So there's a trade-off there, and I think one of the things that lab meat proponents are using is that this is a better product for our environment, uses less resources. Those questions all remain to be seen yet. They're also calling it clean meat. In other words, animals are not sacrificed so that we can have food. Well, without the animals also provide some benefits to our environment. They utilize forages and grazing areas that turning photosynthesis into protein, and we would lose that if we went completely to lab meat. So there's some trade-offs, obviously.
Mm-hmm. In your reporting on this, and you mentioned earlier the FDA was going to be involved, I think a hearing is July 12th, I think, is the date, so later this week, a couple days.
It's Thursday.
Yeah. What is that going to look like? What is this going to look like as it continues to unfold here and this all gets a hearing?
Well, obviously, we're in a very early stages, and just the simple fact that FDA is having a hearing and inviting everybody in to comment means that they are not certain what it's going to look like. It's a new product. We're not even sure whether we want FDA or USDA to have oversight. Certainly, FDA can... when the government gets involved, who knows what's going to happen, right?
Right, exactly. The big companies that you mentioned that were interested in this, I mean, obviously there are some folks seeing dollar signs here. Can you give us a sense of how high stakes that part of it is?
Well, certainly Tyson and Cargill's investment, and in fact, there have been some very famous names such as Richard Branson and Bill Gates that have invested in these companies. So they see it as an opportunity, obviously. So hedging their bets. They know technology moves every industry forward, and the meat industry should be aware that they are not immune to the advancements of technology. Obviously, it's affected every aspect of our life. Why shouldn't it affect our food? And so these companies like Tyson and Cargill believe that they are protein companies and supplying food that is safe and wholesome. And, you know, it, some of that may be chickens and cows, and some of it may be lab-grown cultured meat.
Yeah, I remember, I know there's some reporting on this recently in regards to this story we're talking about, but a couple of years ago, I think, maybe when they came out with salmon that was somehow not, I guess it was genetically altered in some way, they called it Frankenfish,
yes.
I think is what they called it. Just because of the names of it, and just because when people see how the stuff is put together and then presented, I have to wonder how consumers are really going to react when they have the choice to eat something that has been grown in a lab versus something that's been raised on a farm.
Well, there's always that that concern, and that's one of the reasons that if you were going to list pros and cons to lab-grown meat, that would be one of the cons, is how soon will consumers accept the fact that this is not traditional meat raised in the, a way that we normally think of it. But as we know, consumer perceptions, consumer attitudes change. Sometimes they change rapidly. And I think Cargill and Tyson are smart to be on the leading edge of this movement, and at least for their company and for their stockholders.
Greg, we appreciate you being with us here to give us a little bit more insight into all of this, and we'd love to have you back.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me. All right. And I'd be glad to join you again.
All right. Greg Henderson is the editorial director at agweb.com. You can read some of their great stories at agweb.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 63 points this morning. NASDAQ futures are up about 25. S&P futures are up about 6. Gold is trading lower, off about $6.40 an ounce at $1,253.20. Silver is down as well. We'll continue monitoring the markets as we move to the opening bell a little bit later on this morning. We are also keeping tabs on what's going on in Thailand in the cave rescue. The BBC is reporting that an 11th person has now been brought out of the cave in Thailand as rescue operations continue. As you know, there are a total of 13 people that have been there, including 12 boys and a coach. Obviously, there's also rescue personnel in the cave as well, but the BBC reporting an 11th person has been carried out of the cave in Thailand. Let's get the latest now on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Well, good morning, Steve. Not much change in the weekly crop conditions report from the USDA yesterday. The corn conditions rated 75% good to excellent. But taking a look at our neighbor to the north, Wisconsin, 83% of their corn crop rated good to excellent. Illinois, 81%. Indiana, 76%. And Iowa, 78%. And then as we take a look at soybean conditions in the on the national number, soybean stage conditions 71% good to excellent. Indiana 70%, Iowa 76%, and in Illinois 72% of the soybean crop rated good to excellent. As we look at prices yesterday, livestock futures, lean hog futures down over 3%, weighed down by plentiful supplies and worries of weaker demand later this year. And then turning to the grain market, well, there it's a red screen as well. Wheat, corn, and soybeans all dropping for the day. July soybeans down 22¼ cents. Today marks opening day of the Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. That's being held in Marshfield, Wisconsin. And it starts today. It continues through Thursday of this week. That location right in the middle of the state. So they're hoping they'll have good attendance. If you're going, enjoy your time. Hopefully the weather will be good. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. A couple of stories here before we leave you this morning. Nordstrom is expanding its small store model that doesn't offer shoppers clothes to buy and take home. The upscale department store chain will open two more such Nordstrom local stores in Los Angeles this fall, one in Brentwood, the other downtown. Nordstrom's first no-inventory store opened last fall in West Hollywood. The 3,000-square-foot store carries some merchandise for shoppers to try on, but there aren't any clothes there for sale. Shoppers can meet with a stylist and order merchandise online to be delivered to the store on the same day. The stores also focus on services like on-site tailoring. A typical Nordstrom store's average about 140,000 square feet. IHOP has come clean. The pancake chain has acknowledged that a name change announced last month was just a publicity stunt to promote its new hamburger menu. The company, best known for breakfast, already had burgers on the menu, but it started using the IHOB name, I-H-O-B, on social media and website and for in-store promotions to draw attention to a new line of burgers made from Black Angus ground beef. And a land-sharing startup called Tentr, T-E-N-T-R-R, matches landowners looking for extra cash with vacationers yearning for solitude under the stars. The Manhattan-based company CEO says it's like Airbnb for the great outdoors. The company is backed by $15 million in venture capital and has established 500 sites in the Northeast from Pennsylvania to Maine since it began in 2015. It plans to launch campsites in Southern California soon and has eyes set on other parts of the country as well. Landowners pay Tentr $1,500 to set up safari-like tents and other camping gear and list their sites online. Tentr gets about 20% of booking fees, which are generally $100 and up. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, July 10th. The Labor Department releases the JOLTS survey today, Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey. For May, we'll also get the NFIB Small Business Optimism Index, and the Red Book is due as well. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, July the 10th.